Good morning. Here we are. We're in the ninth book. Our subject today is be careful what you ask for. Or as we all often heard as children, I'll give you something to cry about. Anybody ever heard that? How many of you know you've moved into oldom when you use that line on your kids? You've done that. There's certain lines that you, when you use, you realize you've crossed over the Rubicon and you can't come back. I'll give you something to cry about is one. That's one. The other, I don't want to have to pull over. That's another one right there. Then the other, because I said so. The fourth one is this. Well, if everybody jumps off the cliff, will you jump off the cliff with them? There's a few things like that right now. Right. That's right. Raise the lid. They're all kind of different things that we do. And we realize when we start saying those things, did you use soap? Things like, well, we pick up in our story. Time has passed. In chapter 7, I won't read it. I'm going to give you a little quick summation. In chapter 7, there's a point there in chapter 7, verse 15. It said that Samuel was the judge for the rest of his life. He was the last judge. But there's a statement, though, that we're not going to read it, but I just want to throw something out to you. When we left last week and Samuel was getting older and he was getting ready, gearing down, and things were changing and his eyes were getting more dim, but he still had the fire. He wasn't like Eli, that he was still a fire. There's a statement that jumped out to me, and I didn't really read it last week. And in the last part, in fact, verse 17 of chapter 7, it says, then he would return to his home at Ramah. And then it said, and Samuel built an altar to the Lord at Ramah. Okay, that is one of those things you read and go, okay, and you move on. Just forget that and move on. Well, what happens when you turn the page, and we got into the new chapter last week, it said Samuel grew old. And he appointed his sons to be the new leaders, the new judges over Israel. It turns out, though, they were not like their father. They were more like Eli's sons, and they were corrupt. They abused the altar. They were greedy for money. They took bribes, and they actually perverted judgment based on payoffs. That doesn't happen anymore, does it? I don't think so. And then in chapter 8, verse 5, I believe it is. Last week I read it. It said they came, and this is what the leaders said to Samuel. You're old, and your sons are not like you. Well, those things are true. But they said, now give us a... See, they've already figured out what they want. So, you know, that's an interesting thought. Give us a king to judge us like all the other nations have. This is what they want. This statement right here is the turning point of all the story. That statement right there, because things begin to turn. No longer they turned it into a demand list. You know, they got their confidence up even in their rebellion, and they were using something that was true. Careful, put your antennas up. They were using something that was real and true to usher in an ungodly agenda. He was old. These boys were scoundrels, as the word said about Eli's sons. They were not good. But this right here, this statement, this attitude of forcing themselves, and they're using their boldness against this man. This is the turning point of the entire story in the book, I think. They're demanding now. They're not realizing their demand was going to bring a life of sorrow to them. And the statement in verse 8 says it this way, and this is where we left last week. Samuel was displeased with their request, and he went to the Lord for guidance. I mean, you know, there's nowhere else you can go to. J.B. Coates, 70 years ago, wrote the simple song, "Where could I go but to the Lord, seeking a refuge for my soul?" That's where it happened. So here's the conversation between God and Samuel. It's where we pick up. It's verse 7. God said, "Do everything they say to you, for they're rejecting me, son." He's stepping over the fact. He said, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. And what they're really saying is they don't want me to be their king any longer. Why did I say this was a pivotal thing in their whole life, in the whole nation there? Because up until now, the judges had been in charge. Where did the judges get their orders from? From God, and they were carrying out the orders. He said, not any longer. And God, listen to God sound like dad. And ever since I brought them, or he likely said, ever since I bought these crazy people out of Egypt, they have continually abandoned me. They have followed other gods. He's done one thing after another, and at every turn of the road, they go, boom, boom. Why? It was mechanical. It was not in the heart. You're going to see that concept play out in this story a little later on. They have followed other gods, and now they're giving you the same treatment. In other words, you're not the latest buzz. You're not the coolest thing on the block right now. So God says, do as they ask, but solemnly warn them about the way a king will reign over them. It said, so Samuel passed on the Lord's warning. Another warning. Seems like Samuel and the judges that were righteous were always passing on a warning from God. Did they listen? No. He passed on the warning to the people who were asking for a king. Now, we're not going to read this, but you might want to look at it a little bit later. Because the next six verses, and I'm going to give you a quick hit-and-run summation on it. The next six verses, after they make this statement, he said, because they're asking for a king. The next six verses, Samuel is moving into something that basically is saying, be careful what you ask for. He gives them six, I wrote in my notes, these are six verses of horror. Six verses of horror that is coming their way. And you can read it later on in verse 11 through 17. Watch this. He said, okay, this is how the king's going to reign over you. Or in other words, this is how it's going to be. I don't think he went, the king, he will come. No, I think he's, all right, you want this? You've asked for it? You're going to get it. So here's how the king is going to reign over you. Samuel said, here's what he's going to, now notice these hit and run statements where he keeps saying, the king will, your king will, the new king. He says, the king is going to draft your sons and assign them to his chariots, making them run before his chariots. Some may be generals, some may be captains, some will be forced to plow in the fields, harvest the crops, some will make his weapons and chariot equipment. Then the next verse, the king then will take your daughters from you. He will force them to cook, to bake, to make perfumes for him, and that's not all. He will take away the best of your fields. He will take away your vineyards. Boy, this is good. This is how the world is today. He'll take away your olive groves. He will give them to his own officials. Corruption. Here's what's going to happen. He will then take your male and your female workers and your slaves and demand the finest of your cattle and your donkeys for his own use. He will demand then, even after he's taken all those things, he will demand a tenth of your flocks and you will be his slaves. So that's six verses of horror. He's basically saying, I'm going to give it to you. Be careful what you ask for, but you're not going to like this. He's going to take all these things and he's going to fool you by giving you a couple hundred dollars a month. He's taking everything you got and then he's going to tax you on it. I want to say this, and it's a very difficult thing to say. We've grown up in a Judeo-Christian ethic, all of us. We've been influenced all of our lives. That's why I give honor to those 77-year-ago men. And it just seems to me we grew up saying, well, just tell them the truth and it'll be okay. The sad thing, even in this spot, and even in the era in which we're living today, there are people who are seeking God. There are people who are thirsty. And our goal is to find those people, to encourage them, to equip them, to arm them, to let them know they're not alone. Because there are folks who have not bowed that you just don't know yet. You haven't met them yet. So there are millions. There are millions that have not bowed. But we want to encourage. But when it finally occurred to me one day, truth doesn't matter to a lot of folk. Truth doesn't matter to one who wants what they want. Truth does not matter to one who is guided by rage. Truth doesn't matter to one who has ulterior motives. Truth does not matter to one who wants to take something that is not theirs. Truth doesn't matter even when they're told you're going to get a taskmaster that's going to beat your brains out. But I told him the truth. I told him the truth. And when I learned that, truth did not matter to the children of Israel at this point. After all, they've rejected God. Sounds like today. And when you reject God at the same time, you go out of your way to minimize his influence. That's why there's not an attack on anything else but people who speak the name of Jesus, churches who read the word. That's deemed hate speech today. That is someone who not only they will try to remove every memory, every thought, every story, even in your history books. The thing you grew up and you read and you spent 6 weeks on, those of you who are school teachers, you spent 6 weeks on the stories that are so very important, even the story of June the 6th, those very special stories there. Those are done in a paragraph now. Those are done in a paragraph, and the way they're colored and the way they're delivered, it's different. But those who reject the truth will want to minimize the influence of the Christian faith, because we'll be like everybody else. We'll be our little world village. And our world village is going to blow up. But I'm going to pick up reading now. Samuel's been laying it on them. He's given them six verses of horror. So now let's pick up an actual timeline. And then in verse 18, he says this. When that day comes, I underline the word when, because there is going to be a when. When is going to come one day. Those of you who like to read famous old sermons, and you read the you've read Jonathan Edwards' "Sinners in the Hand of an Angry God," famous. It's hard to read in the English the way it's written, and it's hard to even find a printing of it that you can actually read it with your eyes the way our eyes are used to reading things. There's another famous message that the Baptist pastor R.G. Lee, he had his most famous sermon. In fact, historians say that R.G. Lee preached this sermon at least a minimum of 1,200 times. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If I could preach the same sermon 1,200 times, that would save me a lot of time and a lot of research and a lot of reading and stuff, because if I repeat anything you think you heard 8 years ago, you know, he didn't do it this week, did he, like that. R.G. Lee, bring him to town. Preach your sermon like Oral Roberts. Oral Roberts preached the fourth man sermon probably 150, 200 times, and every time I heard it, I leaned in, man. And when he started naming those books in the Bible, I just went, and I knew where it was going even. And R.G. Lee's most famous sermon, does anybody happen to know what it's called? It's two words. The sermon is called Payday Someday. And he was quite an orator, and by the time he started talking about there's going to be a payday someday, by the time he got to the end, people were just ready to tear the doors off and run down to the altar. He was just dangling them over hell, man. They were coming over there, payday someday. That is the truth. And he said, when, and there's going to be a when that day comes, you're going to beg for relief from this king. Now, notice he didn't say this king. He gave them ownership that you have demanded. You've walked in here and paraded yourself. He's going to give you the king. And he says it this way, but the Lord will not help you. That's the second line, and I'll give you something to cry about. I hope you didn't get offended when I said people don't care about truth. Verse 19, but the people refuse to listen to Samuel's warning. Now, spiritually in the front, they should have had the radar to discern what he was saying. And, all right, let's say you don't have that. All right, with just natural stupidity, you ought to be able to read history and say, if you do this, this will happen. We're at a point now where we're too stupid to even read history because we're doing these things. He said, even so, this is what they said. This is what we want. They didn't say we want a king. We still want a king. This is why I say this whole passage, this whole story is the turning point in Israel. Nope. We want to be like other nations around us. We want to kumbaya. We want to sing the every. I'd like to teach the world to sing on a mountain somewhere. No. Our king will judge us, but he will lead us into battle. Samuel said, okay, let's try this again. He repeated to the Lord what the people had said. God replied, do as I say. Give them their king. Samuel agreed, and then he sent the people home. That's the whole first part of a message. Second message, better call Saul. First one, chapter 9, got to find a king. There was a wealthy, influential man of Kish from the tribe of Benjamin. Verse 2, his name was Saul. He was the most handsome man in Israel. He was head and shoulders taller than anyone else. The dude walked in the room. The men admired. The women swooned. And there he was. He was Magnum P.I. walking in the room, right? He was right out of Central Casting. Now, God put him there. And Saul is still a human. He started in humility. He started by obeying God. But because he was a mechanical follower and not a heart follower, he got himself in trouble. He started out humble in humility and listening to what Samuel said and trying his best to live. But he turned into Gaston. He started to believe his own publicity. He'd walk by a mirror and go, "Who is that? Oh, it's me." He was like the Fonz, where he got ready to comb his hair and said, "Why? No, I don't even have to do it. Can you see it? He looked good. He looked good. The people around him were only this tall, and they looked up to him. He carried him. He walked in the room and owned the room when he walked in there. But he started to believe his downfall, and this is our downfall, when we start believing our own publicity. He forgot who put him in the big chair, and it would be his downfall. Now, here's a character point. A lot of times I want to talk to some of these people about the character points in their lives. Saul had some great moments, and you're going to see about it in a minute. And it was like God was blessing them. And God will bless as we obey, as we carry out the word. But when we start making it up ourselves and actually deciding for ourselves, we got a problem. He was mechanical. This is a real port truth for you. Saul, throughout the story, you need to see him through these glasses. He was mechanical in his obedience. He was merely like an employee following orders. He didn't have an ownership there. He followed orders without heart and without interest and without a touch from God. Now, there is a time that God touches him even. But what happens is that sound of how great he is louder in his ear. And as the time passes, even God, when he blesses him, and he actually prophesies, that got bigger. So here's what happened. Chapter 9:15. The Lord told Samuel the previous day, "About this time tomorrow, I'm going to send a man in the land of Benjamin. Anoint him to be the leader of Israel. He will rescue from the Philistines, for I have looked down on my people in mercy and heard their cry." How many times have you in the last year and a half heard God say, "Okay, I've heard their cry, I will have mercy"? How many times? We've heard it almost weekly, off and on. So how does God get the reputation of God's mean, God's judge, God will judge you, God will beat you up, you fall, God will blow you into hell? No, over and over. You know what he's saying? He's saying, you know, I just hope these crazy people will finally one day realize what's going on. He said, "I've looked down, I've heard their cry." Samuel saw Saul, and God spoke to him. "That's the man I told you about. He's going to rule my people." Well, verse 10, it says, "Then he took the flask of olive oil. He poured it over Saul's head. He kissed Saul, and he said, 'I am doing this because the Lord has appointed you to be ruler over Israel. You are his special possession.'" Imagine that kind of start. Imagine that kind of affirmation. "I believe in you. I'm doing this because God told me." Notice he doesn't do any touchy-feely like, "I believe in you too, pal." No, "I'm doing this because God said to do it." Well, chapter 11, Israel makes Saul the king. Chapter 12, picking up in verse 1 and 2, Samuel comes back and he addresses Israel. Now, this is basically his farewell address. Now, he is still going to be alive back there, but he's trying his best to say, "Okay, you need to look to your leader." And he gives a little history about himself. This is, to me, I wish I had a lot of time right here because it's beautiful. It's an affirmation of a life well lived to God. He said, "I've done as you have asked. I've given you your king. Your king is now your leader. I stand here before you. I'm old. I'm gray-haired. And my sons now serve you. I have served as your leader from the time I was a boy to this very day." What a beautiful story. What a way to end. Well, isn't that great? From the time I'm here because my mama prayed. I'm here because God answered. I'm here because he spoke to me. I'm here because I've kept myself righteous all these years, even around all these circumstances. And I've listened to God and I've served you. I've talked to you. Don't you think that there'd be something inside of them? Don't leave. No, but they were so locked in. What they had to have sounds familiar. If you want to do some study later on, read chapter 12. And chapter 12 goes on for a few verses there. And he actually gives a covenant history. He actually gives the history of the land and of the and the story, how they all came to this moment. So right here in verse 13, it picks up. Here is the king that you've chosen. You've asked for him. The Lord's granted your request. But notice the caveat. Now, if you fear and worship the Lord, if you listen to his voice, if you do not rebel against the Lord's command, then both you and your king will show that you recognize the Lord as your God. He's actually giving them an opportunity to prove themselves. If you can get this thing together, it's going to happen. He said, but if you rebel against the Lord's command, and if you refuse to listen to him, who's he talking to? Not just the people. He's saying it loud enough so Saul can hear it standing next to him. If you refuse to listen, then God's hand will be heavy upon you as it was upon your ancestors. But things started well. Chapter 13, they continued a war, and they had early success in each of their conquests. In fact, it says that Saul was 30 years old when he took the throne there, and he reigned for 42 years. Chapter 14 tells a story that the Israelites are constantly fighting with the Philistines through all of Saul's lifetime. But it said whenever Saul observed if he saw someone who was brave in the army, he'd go honor even those who served. He was doing things right, and God was blessing. They are on a roll. They're doing well. God is blessing. Have you seen those movies where they're passing time and the war? They have one war they win, and they're showing, and then the newspaper turns, and it gives the headline, and they're going, the newspaper turns again. This is what's going on. We won. We beat them. This comes here, and things are going good. The army's building up. He's looking good. It's going good. But now God is going to expect a little more out of him. This is where it gets a little unusual. Chapter 15, verse 3. One day, Samuel said to Saul, "It was the Lord who told me to anoint you. I want you to listen to another message from the Lord." Notice this verbiage that he uses. Remember when his mama prayed? She used this same line a few weeks. Do you remember this? And he has used it throughout his life. He said, "This is what the Lord of heaven's armies." His mama prayed like that. He heard it. Have declared, "I have decided to settle the accounts with the nation of Amalek for opposing Israel when they came from Egypt." That's been going on. Amalek was a son of Esau. Haman and Esther was Amalekite. This had gone on for over 500 years. They weren't going to change. Can I lovingly say to you, sometimes you're not going to change. You're not going to change some people. There are people in this world right now that we don't need to be sitting at a table with them. If they'd obeyed God back in the book a little bit earlier and cleaned house, then you wouldn't be meeting with them. There are people right now trying to get on the cabinet in Israel, and they are avowed against the Israel people. It's going on right now. They have sandbagged that thing there, and there are things going on in there that are not going to be good. And there are times we'll just get together, we'll just talk. There are some people you just can't talk to. There's some people you just can't talk to. And these Amalekites were these people. These are these people. You know, don't you know they're just dealing with, Samuel's dealt with them all these years. He's looking at, why hadn't God just hit you in the head with a shovel, some of you right now? You're not listening to the word. This is a truth moment for all of us. Don't fool yourself. The enemy does not change. It's not your job to change them. It's your job to be smart, to be wise, and to listen to what God says. You can't change some things. You can't. Oh, I'll just change it. You can't change it. You can't change it. You can't change it when the core is against God. He said, and here's what he said. Here's what we're going to do. God said, "I'm going to settle the accounts." Verse 3. "Go and completely destroy the entire nation. The men, the women, the children, the babies, the cattle, the sheep, the goats, the camels, and the donkey." This sounds outrageous. This especially would really make the news. God, so your God wanted to wipe all those people out. That's an awful, terrible thing. Yes, now you got to understand now. We are still in an old covenant. We're still in an old covenant. God's going to settle all those accounts there. And things are done, were done different in those days. And it sounds outrageous, but God knew the whole story. And even from your vantage point today, you know the whole story. And you know you can't play with these people. As long as that seed is still there, it's in those suckers, man. It's in everything they touch. They're contamination. You cannot go with these people. So here's what happened. Verse 7. Saul then slaughtered the Amalekites, starting out good, and it just as God said. He captured Agag. He was the Amalekite king. He completely destroyed everyone else. Saul and his men spared his life, and they kept, though, the best sheep, the best goats, the best cattle, the best calves, the lambs. In fact, they kept everything that appealed to them. Remember when I said it started out good? But when they get to the point thinking that you put yourself there and you've had all of these successes there, they only destroyed what was worthless or of poor quality. And if you only destroy something of no worth and no quality, there's no sacrifice there. Now, later on, we're going to read when we get into 2 Samuel, and we're talking about David. David makes a statement in 2 Samuel 24 that he says, I will not present an offering to my Lord that cost me nothing. You see this as you fast forward and you go to the temple and the sacrifices along the temple. Remember the idea of the old covenant. You're raising the sacrifice. There's love. You're feeling that. You're feeling the awfulness of sin. There should be tears. There should be sorrows when something innocent takes the place of what you've done. Move on fast forward at the temple. They're standing out front of the temple. They're selling the sacrifice. As you go in, you can buy it. There's no heartfelt thing. There's no relationship. You've only lost a dollar. You brought that thing to say, oh, I've done my religious obligation. I've jumped through my religious hoop. There's no heart change. There's no sorrow for sin. There's nothing there. And this is what we're dealing with right now. Boy, this is interesting. Man, help me. They destroyed what was worthless and of poor quality. That's not a real sacrifice. That's a religious mechanical jumping through hoops. Verse 10, so the Lord said to Samuel. Now, Samuel has already stepped down from his judgeship, but Samuel, just like he was as a boy, he was a dependable pipeline between God and the children of Israel, and the pipeline is still flowing strong. God said this about Saul. I'm sorry I ever made him the king. He's not been loyal to me. He's refused to obey my command. Samuel was deeply moved when he heard this, and he cried out to God all night. Have you ever felt an anguish for someone that you really knew was missing God? Someone that you loved? Someone that knew better? And the anguish that you feel and the disappointment. Early the very next morning, Samuel went to find Saul. Adam, where are you? Sound familiar? Someone told him Saul went to the town of Carmel and set up a monument to himself. Gaston has appeared. Not God. When Samuel finally found him, in his best Eddie Haskell voice, he greeted him cheerfully. Hello, Brother Samuel. How are you? Things are going well, aren't they? May the Lord bless you. I've carried out the Lord's command. I've done all these things. Samuel's been around the tree a while, and he stops, and he probably leans on his staff, and he said, all right, so what's this bleating of the sheep and the goats and the lowing of the cattle that I hear over here? What is all this going on? Oh, my brother, it's great. Well, you know, it's true that the army spared the best of the sheep and the goats and the cattle, Saul said, but we're going to sacrifice them to the Lord our God. Guilty feet ain't got no rhythm, I'll tell you that right now. He said, we have done this, but we destroyed everything else. I want you to know, we destroyed, but we kept all the good stuff, and we're going to give it to God. People live their life, and they want to give God a pit. Well, God, we just love you. Boy, there's so much richness here. This is ritual. This is not faith. Samuel said, stop talking. Just shut up. Listen to what the Lord told me last night. What did he tell you, my brother? Although you may think little of yourself, you are not the leader of the tribe of Israel. The Lord was the one that anointed you the king. God put you here, and you forgot who put you here. The Lord sent you on a mission. He told you, go and completely destroy the sinners. I like that statement thrown in there. The Amalekites, until they are all dead. Why haven't you obeyed God? Why did you rush for the plunder and do what was evil in God's sight? But I did obey the law. I did obey what God said. Saul obeyed the version of God that he had created for himself. And people are living in the world right now obeying the God they create for themselves. Lives are not changed. Their hearts are not changed. They're still the same ungodly people on the inside. But God, I did this for you. This is what he's dealing with right now. And that sounds familiar today. Saul earnestly insists back. But I carried out the mission he gave me. I brought back King Agag, but I destroyed every. And then my troops. No, the story changes a little bit here. My troops brought in the best of the sheep, the goats, to sacrifice to God. Then he said, your God. Sounds good, doesn't it? You love God too, don't you? Yeah, I love God, but this is a booby trap word. Samuel replied, what's more pleasing? Now, this is a very pivotal, important truth you need to understand. Because this shows how God does things. Watch this statement here. This is very, very pivotal. What's more pleasing to God? Your burnt offerings, your sacrifice, your little feeble things you're going to give to God, or your obedience to God's voice? And notice this. This is an eternal truth in Scripture. You need to look at this and learn this. He said, obedience is better than sacrifice. How many times have you told your kids, obey me? You didn't do this right. You didn't do it as you said. Submission is better than offering the fat of ram. But God, I gave you these things. And notice this. This is really wild here. Rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. What does witchcraft do? Witchcraft endeavors to seek another way other than what God says and what that is right. When you go to witchcraft, you are listening to another voice, not the voice of God. So you are putting on, that's what witchcraft is, letting another voice speak right now. So when in rebellion in your heart, you are letting another voice speak to you that is not God's voice. This may be a little heavy for you right now, but that's where we are right now. When we rebel in God, that is witchcraft, because we know what is right. And stubbornness is as bad as worshiping idols. Why does that mean? Well, you were told in the very first commandment, you will have no other gods before me. The next one, you will not bow to any graven image. You're just stubborn. You're stubborn. And because you've rejected the command of the Lord, slam dunk, the Lord's rejected you as king. So I wrote it this way. His disobedience brought judgment. You know what God wants in our lives? He doesn't want our presence. He wants our presence. God wants our presence. He doesn't want our song and dance. The other thing just comes out of our outpouring to God. But we must give more attention to pleasing God than to please ourselves. Dr. Glenn Packiam said it this way. We live in a generation now that wants justice, but they have no sense of righteousness. They're hungry for community, but no taste for the cross. We want the good news of the good news without the gospel of Christ. We want the life of the kingdom without the claims of the king. We want the blessings. We want to dance. We want to sing. We want to party, but we don't want to do what God says. Saul finally realizes he's cornered. He's up a tree. God's got him up the tree. Samuel's got him up the tree with his big staff in his hand, hitting at him probably. So finally, Saul admits to Samuel, okay, yes, I've sinned. I disobeyed your instructions. Again, mechanical response, because you're going to watch this now. Now notice, he shows his hand. He shows his core. He shows his heart. Watch this. This is where the preacher dudes are having trouble today. He said, I know I did it, but I was afraid of the people and what they demanded. A lot of folk are afraid of what the people are demanding, and they're not bringing the word. They've backed off on the word. He said, I was more. So now please forgive my sin. Come back with. And he's even trying to save face in front of the people. Tell you what, come back with me that I may worship God. Samuel replied, I'm not going back with you. I don't want to be seen with you. And since you've rejected the Lord's command, he's rejected you as king. Well, Samuel's getting ready to walk off, and the story goes like this. He grabs at Samuel, and he grabs his coat. And as he grabs his coat, Samuel pulls away, and he yanks his coat. This is, you don't see, there's no movie this dramatic right now. He's walked off from it. He's had enough with him. He's an old guy, but he's ticked off. And Saul knows that he's ticked off right now. And here's what happens in verse number 28. Samuel said, okay, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel to you just like this. The way that you rip this off, the Lord has torn the kingdom off of you. He's going to give it to someone else. And he's out of snuff here, as Grandma used to say. He turns and looks, and God's going to give it to somebody better than you. Kill shot. Pretty strong, isn't it? Somebody better than you. And he who is the glory of Israel will not lie. He will not change his mind. For God's not human that he should change his mind. You remember the story in the last part of Numbers where Balaam is giving the word that God is not a man that he should lie. God doesn't have to change his mind. And in other words, he's saying, well, the word I've given to you, it's irrevocable right now. Well, he goes on to say, I know I've sinned. He said, at least come. He says, can you just come back and be with me? And the elders can see. So again, he's trying to save face. If he was repenting, he'd be on the floor. He'd stand in front of the people and say, I've sinned. So our story ends with a very warm, fuzzy, just a happy happy ending here. How many like happy endings? Are you about to have a happy ending? I doubt it. Samuel says, oh, before we go, bring Agag to me. Bring him to me. Agag comes in, because there's the old honor among thieves thing. He comes in and he's smiling. And says, actually, scripture, he's full of hope. He thought, surely the worst is over. I've been spared. I'm going to get to meet the old prophet. We're gonna work something. He's going to hook me up. We're going to work something out. Samuel said to him, Agag, your sword has killed the sons of many mothers. And the old guy says, and now your mother's going to be childless. Samuel took a sword that said, he didn't just stab Agag. He cut Agag in pieces. He hacked him. I think King James says, he hacked him into pieces. little boy in Sunday school and said, yes, and there were 12 baskets left over, he said. He cut him into pieces. That's probably the most ferocious illustrated sermon people have ever seen in history. Remember when I said I read a scripture for you in the front and it didn't really make much sense to me because I just thought it was geography? It said, and then Samuel went home to Ramah. That's where his altar was. That's where home base was. That's where God spoke. And Saul returned to his house. Verse 35, and Saul never went to meet with Saul again. But remember when I said, if your heart is right and you're mourning for someone who you know who has deliberately turned away and run from the truth, you'll feel a godly sorrow. You won't be able to fix some of it, and you have to let that go. But you can't deny there is a sorrow and a sadness when you see someone who has gone another way. It's their sadness there that hurts. He said, but he mourned for him constantly. And how would you like it to be written for the rest of time that made the statement, and the Lord was sorry he had ever made Saul the king of Israel? Dude had it all. Dude had it all. Physical, the voice, he had everything. He could do anything. They honored him. He looked great. He carried himself. Oh, he had some skins on the wall, man. He had done great things. But his downfall was when he took his hand off the wheel and started trusting himself. And it's an example. Now, the story of Saul is not going to be over. But don't you know that was a long, quiet walk home for everybody? Nobody was saying anything. That was a quiet walk. Seemed longer than before. We're going to deal with him off and on. When we get to Father's Day, we're going to see a heart inside of him where he should have been a mentor and a father, but he was ruled by jealousy. He was ruled by rage. Even with all of these things that God gave him, it wasn't enough because his heart was never toward God. His heart was to look good, to be good. But today I leave you with an encouraging word. Isn't it neat that you don't have to experience what they experienced? Smart person learns from the mistakes of others. Smart person learns from history. A smart general learns about what other battles, what happened in battles, and what the strategy was. We live in this time, well, my son's got to make his own mistakes. That's dumb. No. They're going to do it anyway, but don't give voice to it. Don't give credence to it. Isn't it better to learn? Isn't it better to learn and to save the heartache there? Today I give you a good word. You're not going to dance and sing while you leave. I just hacked a king up in front of you, and now I'm sending you home in Jesus' name. But this is the story I'm supposed to deliver. Samuel, God told me to tell you this. That's right. And that's kind of where I am today. But I will tell you this. Remember the line where he said, God's going to find somebody else, and he's going to do this job better than you. He's going to be better than you. Next week, there's a new kid in town, and he's just a kid. It's an amazing story. And not only are you going to meet the kid, you're going to meet a giant from Gath next week. It's quite a story. This would be a good one to bring your friends, your kids, and your buddies, because the story is going to be good. And somebody gets hacked up, but it's a different type of story, you know? It's more fun. It's you going, yes, yeah, like that. Or one preacher said, the sermon is actually one way to get ahead. And we'll do that next week. Let's all stand together. Father, we love you today. We thank you this morning for your blessing. Thank you for these good people. You will make a way where there doesn't seem to be a way. You work in ways that we can't see. We love you, Jesus. We bless you right now. Father, thank you for these good people. Here's a problem. I know you. I know every one of your faces. I'm familiar with every one of your faces. We need a face that I don't know, that you don't, that others don't know. A face that needs to hear the gospel. A face that needs to know that in a time where truth is made up as people go along. We need people that need the word. People that need salvation. People that need the touch. That's not my job. That's your job. To go out and compel them and to bring them. You get them here. The worship will speak. The word will speak. And the love and the camaraderie will also speak. Father, bless these great, wonderful people right now. I'm thankful today that I can commemorate those who sacrificed so I could be here today. But more important is that sacrifice you did for us on Calvary. That's the most important of all sacrifices. It nothing supersedes that love, and you did it because you loved us. We love you. And let's tag the line and we say, He will be my God. Hold me closely to his side. Love and thanks. With love and thanks for each new day he will make a way. He will make a way. Right hands up. May the Lord bless you. May the Lord keep you. May the Lord make his face shine upon you. May the Lord be gracious to you and grant you peace. May there be joy in your path this week. May there be answers to prayer this week. May a healing touch come to you this week. May laughter come to you this week. May things come that surprise you and bless you. And even in those things that create fear and concern in us, Father, let us see beyond that, knowing you will make a way. We love you. We bless you. Thank you for the covenant words we're reading today. I encourage each of you to read these stories. Go back and read chapter 11, chapter 12. Read the story so you get a little bit more color there that I can't do on all these times, because I want to share it with you. Next week, there's a new kid in town. It's a great story. I'll see you then. God bless.